Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Everybody Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Sunday, January 18, 2015. We're so glad you joined us tonight as we continue offering lifeboats, options, inspiration, tools, and more for navigating the waters of very turbulent times. Our shows are pre-recorded on Progressive Radio Network, which operates on the Internet, and as we all know, just about everything on the Internet functions by way of a server, and from time to time, servers go down. This is no one's fault, it just happens. So last week, and once or twice before that, since I've been hosting the show, we've had some technical malfunctions. Again, no one's fault. At some point, this may happen again, and if it does, it's not helpful to me or anyone else if a bunch of Facebook messages and emails come pouring in telling me about it. I'll probably already know. When this sort of thing happens, please just go to the archive the next day. Usually the glitch is taken care of within 24 hours, so in the future, just visit the archive when this happens, and that's very easy to do. Go to prn.fm, click on Shows, and scroll down to the Lifeboat Hour, where you are almost certain to find the archived show from the night before. I really appreciate your cooperation with this. So, I'd like to recommend, especially since tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day, Monday, and I'd really like to recommend that you see at some point the movie Selma, which is about the civil rights movement when Dr. King was organizing the famous march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, in the fight for voting registration for blacks in Alabama. I rarely do a commercial for a movie, but I believe this movie is a very bright light amid the darkness of the racial divide of our country. This movie got snubbed for an Academy Award, which of course says nothing about its artistic value. Some of the most stunning movies in history have never gotten awards. In this movie, I was especially touched by the sense of community that happened almost overnight as a result of the oppression people were experiencing, and as a result of their desire to make a monumental change, such as the effort to get all black adults in Alabama registered to vote. It underscores what I've said many times, which is that really solid community grows out of oppression and compels us to put aside personal preferences and ego trips in order to survive. Many people have cited minor historical inaccuracies in the movie, but I believe that the message of the movie supersedes those, so I urge you to see it. I'd also like to announce a free online event that I highly recommend to you. It's called The Future is Calling Us to Greatness, and it takes place January 26th through February 8th. It features a host of interviews with some of the greatest minds on the planet regarding the global crisis. People like Richard Heinberg, James Howard Kunstler, Chris Martinson, myself, Elizabeth Satoris, Derek Jensen, and many, many more are interviewed. To register for this free event, visit www.entheos.com, entheos.com, and click on The Future is Calling Us to Greatness. So speaking of art, one of the lifeboats that we can utilize in these turbulent times is the lifeboat of art, music, poetry, dance, theater, and much more. Our guest tonight is an artist, a musician, a poet, and an author. She is Pauline LaBelle, who lives in British Columbia in the Vancouver area. She's an award-winning novelist, an Emmy-nominated screenwriter for the song Spinner, She's a professional singer and has recorded 5 CDs of her original songs in both French and English. Her most recent CD is Deep Fun, Songs About Science, Food, and Sex. She had a successful theatrical career in the 70s and 80s, performing in theaters across Canada, and was called a musical instrument linked to a soul for her passionate betrayal of French singer Edith Piaf in a play she co-wrote. Her poetic, musical telling of the evolutionary story of the universe has received praise from participants, educators, and the scientific community. Pauline's passion and life's work is the integration of music, science, nature, and spirit for the benefit of the entire Earth family. The most recent manifestation of that passion is Becoming Intimate with the Earth, a book that was published in 2013 by Collins Foundation Press. Pauline offers Becoming Intimate with the Earth workshops, as well as storytelling workshops, which empower participants to engage in the evolutionary act of telling their own stories. Her website is paulinelabelle.com, and that's spelled PAULINELEBEL.com. Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Pauline.
Thank you for inviting me, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Thank you. You know, I had the privilege of meeting you back in 2013 at a workshop that I did on Bowen Island, British Columbia, outside of Vancouver, and you offered a song in the workshop and gave me a copy of your book, Becoming Intimate with the Earth, which we're going to talk about in a moment. But first, I'd like you to tell us how you see the role of the artist in these times. As industrial civilization keeps crumbling so dramatically every day, a lot of people think that art is the last thing we need to be focusing on. We have to fix the situation, they say, or at least focus on survival. So for those folks, art is kind of a luxury or maybe even something kind of frivolous that won't help us survive. Please tell us why art is essential at this time and what the role of the artist is.
Well, Carolyn, I was listening to your New Year's broadcast, and you talked about your 3 intentions for 2015 and beyond.
Right.
They were wonderful intentions. Let me see if I got them right. So to live from the heart, mm-hmm. fall back in love with the earth, and to create beauty. So you
yes.
wherever you are. Well, those are good intentions for all of us here on the Lifeboat, and this is actually the work that artists do. So I felt like you were inviting all of us to live like an artist, to connect with the artist inside each and every one of us. It's a heightened way to live. So I'm not talking about people in the, what I call the entertainment distraction
Ellen's
industry.
Design challenge is furniture.
Although a few of them are real artists, but it's the artists that give us the stories, the songs, the poems that will open our hearts, that will really help us
yes.
to live from our hearts and our minds. And if these artists are actually in touch with where they come from, which is the earth, they themselves are falling back in love with the earth and creating works of art that will be the same for others. Artists are driven to create beauty. And so if it's a writer, it's creating beauty in the words, not only that they write, but the words that we speak. So we can create beauty in our daily lives. You know, in the food we eat, in the way we set the table, the way we interact with others can be a beauty way. So it becomes part of our daily lives. And I like what Marianne Woodman says, that artists are truth seekers and truth sayers.
You see, I love that as well.
Yeah, I think our culture has trivialized the creative act by talking about self-expression. Because, you see, the root of all creative or artistic acts is not self-expression. It's selflessness or self-forgetting. You become so absorbed in what you're doing in this creative act and connected to something far greater than yourself, whether you call it the source or the muse or whatever you choose. And so the role of the artist, well, you know, they need to spend a lot of time alone to do their work. And boy, I'm very familiar with that. Much of the work I do is very solitary. I mean, I'm writing a song by myself and working it and working it and working it. And then I phone up my musician friends and say, okay, let's go record it. So I love that when I get to get out of the house.
Right.
Same thing with writing the book. As you know, it's a very solitary thing. But I really think today it's very important for artists to get more and more into the community. And it's been a real journey for me because I've used to work in a solitary way. So about 10 years ago, I had moved, I'd moved to Bowen Island about 4 or 5 years before. And I was inspired to organize a festival to celebrate my home because I could see that things were changing quickly. This is a very kind of small, semi-rural area. And some people have big dreams about what this could be, you know, another Coney Island or something.
Right.
So I wanted to organize this festival that would reconnect people to the land, to the stories of the land and to each other. So I called it Voices in the Sound. We did it in 2005 and 2006, 3 days. We had nature hikes to tell the story of the plants. So the plants got to tell the story of the island. I had a geologist take us to this beautiful part of the island and tell the story told by the rocks. And old-timers were telling stories about what it was like to be settling here 100 or so years ago. We had a boat cruise around the island to tell the marine story of the island. We had indigenous people, the Coast Salish, came in their beautiful cedar dugout canoe and did their indigenous singing and dancing. And then there was my musical. So I wrote a musical, also called Voices in the Sound, and we did it outdoors on the ground, no light enhancement, no sound enhancement. I wanted it to be as natural as possible. And I began my musical with the universe story, with the evolutionary story of our origin. And I integrated and wove the history of Bowen Island. So the first 15 minutes or so was the universe story. And then I integrated and wove in the story of Bowen Island's history. So for 3 days, we told the story of Bowen Island in so many different ways. And people who came to see the festival and the musical, they told me that they saw the island in a different way. Mm-hmm. After that, one person told me that I had transformed the island into an altar.
Wow.
That's what artists do. They open us to other ways of seeing and hearing. I love what the Sufi poet Hafiz said, something like this. A poet is someone who can pour light into a spoon, then raise it to nourish our beautiful parched mouths.
Wow.
And boy, do I ever feel like a lot of our mouths are parched right now with worry and concern. And somebody else said, sometimes a person needs a story more often than food to survive. And that's my work as an artist and the work of many other artists who are telling those stories to nourish us, to provoke us, to move us forward. And now, as I'm an older artist, a mature artist, an elder, I feel I have new demands upon me, upon my role. And I keep asking, how can I be of service to the young people who will be living their lives on this ground that we've left behind? You know, how do I mentor them? How do I pass on my hard-earned wisdom? And what about the older people, many people, old people around me who are afraid to die, afraid to move on? How do I work with that? And how do I be of service to the middle-aged people who are just plain weary? So I feel a responsibility to them all.
Well, you know, as you ask the question, how do I, and you're asking a series of questions, how do I am reminded of a beautiful song that you wrote called How Shall I Walk with This Wounded Earth? This is a question that we're all sitting with, indeed struggling with every day. And one of the lines in the song asks, how can I be a blessing to the land? Let's listen to this beautiful song sung by composer Pauline LaBelle. Thank you.
eyes are red from crying. My heart is sick with grief. They tell me the earth is dying. Tell me there's no relief. Where will I find the courage to wake up and take a stand? How can I be a blessing to the land? How shall I walk? How shall I walk? How shall I walk with this wounded earth? How shall I walk? How shall I walk? How shall I walk with this wounded earth? I breathe. I am blessed by the water I drink. I am blessed by the food I eat. All blessings I receive from the earth. How can I be a blessing? How shall I sing? How shall I sing? How shall I sing with this wounded earth? Sing with joy. Sing with sorrow. Sing with zest. Sing with hope. With love for this wounded and still beautiful, still beautiful earth. That
was Pauline LaBelle singing How Shall I Walk with This Wounded Earth, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker. So Pauline, I want to get into your book now, Becoming Intimate with the Earth, and I'd like to hear how you came to write it, and I'd also like you to summarize the five major topics you address in the book, which are the way of wonder, the way of emptiness, the way of imagining, the way of transformation, the way of community. Please talk to us about those.
Okay, so what was happening, I was just becoming more and more disturbed by the increasing exploitation and degradation of the earth, and asking what kind of world are we leaving for our grandchildren, and I just had to do something. So I took my anger and my fear, and I used them as fuel to just start writing, I knew how to do that. And the writing helped me to transform my anger and fear and into action. So the first chapter is called Born into a Story, because I believe we're born into a story, into many stories, the family stories, the cultural stories, the cosmological stories, the current scientific stories, the current political stories, and that this really influences how we see ourselves and how we see the world and our place in it. So I first start with that, and then I talk about the five ways of intimacy, which I chose. I mean, it's arbitrary. You could choose two, you could choose 20, but I came up with five ways of intimacy. And that there is a guide for each way. So in the way of wonder, the way of wonder is that place of childlike awe and fascination with the natural world and with everything. You know, a child, a little tiny baby looking at their toes, you know, getting older and, you know, going and picking up a caterpillar off the ground and just being so fascinated by everything. And so it's that way of wonder is just being, it's part of what you were talking about, that falling back in love with the earth. That's very much that love with all of it. And the intimacy guide for that chapter is air. Because I think the very first time we experience awe and wonder is as we pop out of our mother's womb and we take that first breath, that, oh my God, you know.
Right.
I left this nice, dark, wet, safe place and now it's lights and people talking. It's that first sense of wonder. And if we can maintain that throughout our lives, it makes for a much more graceful life, a much more grateful life. So that's the way of wonder. And the way of emptiness is when we sit with the reality of how we have taken too much out of the earth, put too much back in the earth to deal with all the toxins, and we just sit with that and feel the grief about it, because I like what Matthew Fox says about if we stay. He calls the way of wonder the via positiva.
Right.
And you cannot really have a full via positiva unless you enter what he calls the via negativa, the way of emptiness. Because without entering into the way of emptiness and feeling your grief and feeling your pain and your isolation and your sorrow, that life becomes banal and violent and we are easily manipulated. So we sit in the way of emptiness to feel our grief, to feel everything we need to feel. And the way the intimacy guide in that chapter is fire. And I chose fire because fire is going to burn us clean of delusion. You know, we can walk around and say, well, it's not happening. You know, all the climate deniers, whatever. It's not happening. Well, it was happening, but now it's getting better. I mean, we can have all kinds of delusions about science is going to fix this, whatever they are. But when you sit in the way of emptiness and fire is going to burn you clean of that, you just have to sit with that place of not knowing, that place of uncertainty. And so the next, we move into the way of imagining. So we've experienced the way of wonder, we've experienced the way of emptiness, and now we're ready to imagine how we could be in this world, how we could be a blessing to the world. And for our intimacy guide, because the whole idea with the guide is that you don't want to go to these places alone, so I offer people an intimacy guide. So the intimacy guide in the way of imagining is water. Because there isn't any element on earth more imaginative than water. Just think about it. First, you have to be imaginative, you have to be very fluid and very open. And water can be liquid, it can be ice, it can be vapor steam, it can be rushing down a river and following the contours of the river and also changing the contours of the river and wearing down the rocks. And or it can be in a still pond, if there it is in your body, all the different waters in your body. So the way of imagining calls upon water, the watery parts of us, the watery parts of us that are connected to the water on earth, to imagine how we could live a better way, a different way. And that's where the artist in us comes into play as well, to do this imagining. So we've got our imagining happening. So next we go into the way of transformation. The way of transformation where we roll up our sleeves and we get to work. Because there's plenty of work to do. When people ask me, well, you know, what can I do? Well, pick it. I mean, so many things to be done. What is calling to you? What if you're a local person, then work at the local level. The intimacy guide for the wave transformation is soil. Because what was really fun about writing this book is just doing all the research. Like, they're finding out things out about the soil just recently. That there is so much going on below soil. And, you know, I don't know why we spend all that money to go to the moon and Mars and back, because all the real excitement is happening just below our feet. There's this whole universe of insects and fungi and bacteria and all this, these mycorrhizal fungi that are these enormous mats underneath the earth that are transforming soil day and night, all doing all this for free. So I have soil as the guide in the way of transformation, because it sure knows how to transform the old, the dead, into the new, because that's really our work right now, is to look at those old stories, those old ways of being, and transform them into something that's more beneficial to the earth and to ourselves. So the last chapter is the way of community, because we can't do this alone. You know, and I remember somebody saying, we've had enough of lonesome heroes. You know, that's big.
Oh, enough. Yeah, absolutely.
We've had enough of lonesome heroes. We need heroic communities, because it's going to take communities to do this work. And so my intimacy guide that I chose for the way of community is the community of trees, because trees know more about community than anything else on the planet. And they, you know, we're learning things, how they communicate. You know, we're just learning what a community it is. And you just don't think you can just take down a couple of trees and that isn't going to affect the entire community around it. So, I people say, well, they ask me, well, where's the safest place to live when everything collapses? And I realized that this question comes out of their suffering and their fear. And I suggest that community is the best place to be, no matter where you live. Find your community and go where you are needed. You know, that's because we have reached the limits of Earth's capacity to give us everything we want and to receive everything we don't want. So I think it's in community that we're going to discover new ways to be on this beautiful blue dot.
Well, thank you for that. That is such a lovely summary of your book. And, you know, as you were speaking of the way of emptiness, I was reminded of a beautiful poem by one of my favorite contemporary poets, Mark Nepo, entitled The Flute of Interior Time. And he introduces the poem by talking about how most musical instruments are made by a process of hollowing out, and that in the same way, we are hollowed out by life. So that if we surrender to the hollowing out, beautiful music can be made by the soul. And I'm going to read the poem, and I'd like you to comment on how you resonate with it as a musician and as an intimate friend of the earth. This is The Flute of Interior Time by Mark Nepo. If you are never hungry, how can you know the contours of your stomach? If you are never thirsty, how can you know the edges of your voice? If you are never disappointed, how can you know the reaches of your heart? If you are never in doubt, how can you know the ceiling of your mind? If you are never empty, how can you know the fullness of your spirit? If you are never alone, how can you know God? So, Pauline, how do you resonate with Mark Nepo's poem?
I love it. It's a wonderful poem. It's a new one for me. Thank you for introducing it to me. It's something I'll pass on to my students, because I tell my students in so many words that the singer needs to be hollowed out before you sing. Mm. Because you aren't singing, you are being sung. And you need to be hollow to allow that to happen. So his poem, it just says really clearly why emptiness is important. And as a singer, I would add to the poem, if I may.
Right.
Dear Mr. Nepo, if I may be so bold, I would add, if you are never silent, how can you know the beauty of your own voice? Mm-hmm. We hollow ourselves out in the silence, and this silence, this emptiness, it's full. It's pregnant with sound. Yeah, I write a lot about silence because it's the womb of all creativity. It's just silence is a beautiful place to sit with.
It absolutely is. And your songs are so lovely, and they're more than just entertainment. Your songs provide a refuge and are examples of music as catharsis. They invite people to laugh and to cry. Can you just briefly say a little bit about that?
Sure. I used to tell people, if you find my songs entertaining, that's a bonus, a byproduct. But my songs, they come out of a fierce need to communicate an important idea or a feeling. So it's been a bit of a journey getting to that place. My background was in classical music. I have a Bachelor of Music in Voice and Piano. And there was so much emphasis on bel canto singing, beautiful singing, on getting the right tone, and a whole lot of intellectual stuff, really at the expense of communicating a story and emotion. And then after I graduated, I worked in musical theater. And because I was young and cute and could dance a bit and act a bit, I got cast in some pretty frivolous shows. But I just knew there was a greater role for theater. And when I performed the role of Edith Piaf, the French singer, I really got it. I really got the deep purpose of music, that catharsis. You know, I'd be singing on the stage and I could hear people in the audience sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel the energy in the theater changing after just one song. It was magic. So I just see how, you know, music can act as a support for whatever you're going through. It can act as catharsis to move you forward. And it can act as just a refuge to just sit and be with it. So, yeah, singing's great. I love it.
You know, the first song that we heard from you was very serious. But now we're going to hear one that invites us to laugh. Here is Mitochondria Motel by Pauline LaBelle.
So I call this one Mitochondria Motel. I'm getting kind of warm. So this thing on my back, might as well look at it now. Get over it.
Pacemaker.
It's for Alex so he can do his thing there. So, okay, so my leg booty and... What makes your life worth living? What keeps everything alive? What gives you everything you need and keeps you satisfied? It's your friendly bacteria. That's why you're safe and sound. 'Cause your friendly bacteria make the world go round. Well, they invented photosynthesis and fermentation, too. So you can dine on camembert and drink your favorite brew with a twist of lime. And your intestinal bacteria's on guard at the scene of the crime. Invented DNA, you see, they're nobody's fool. They invented food digestion, and they never even went to school. Bacteria are the building blocks of life. In the great evolutionary patisserie, well, animals may be the icing, but bacteria are the cake. And mitochondria, well, they take the cake. When you eat cake or anything else, your blood delivers sugars, glucose to your cells. And the mighty mitochondria, they use oxygen to burn up these sugars and turn them into adenosine triphosphate, ATP for short, a molecule that your cells use to give you energy. Oh, those clever mitochondria. They live inside your cells, trillions upon trillions, making sure you're feeling well. They burn up the glucose. They're working hard for me and you, giving you oomph and zest and power and lots of zippity-doo. Lots of zippity-zippity-doo. Now you might think it's strange. I think it's swell. My ever-loving body is a mitochondria motel. Did you know you've got 10 times more bacteria cells in your body than human cells? Yes, folks, it's true. That's why I'm asking you this question. What makes your life worth living? What keeps everything alive? What gives you everything you need? Keeps you satisfied? It's your friendly bacteria. That's why you're safe and sound. 'Cause your friendly bacteria make the world go round. Round and round and round and round. It's not money. Mm-mm. No, 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 no. It's not love. It's bacteria. Bacteria, bacteria. Bacteria make the world go round and round and round and round. And thanks to your bacteria, you're so friendly bacteria. You're symbiotic. You're patriotic. You're probiotic bacteria. No one ever sleeps. I mean, no one ever sleeps. I'm telling you, no one ever sleeps. Alone. No one ever sleeps alone. Thank you, bacteria. My dear, 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 dear bacteria. You've been so good. So good to me. So good to me. So good to me. Hey, did you remember to say thank you to your bacteria this morning?
That was Pauline LaBelle with her not very serious song, Mitochondria Motel. And this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker.
Carolyn, that song was so much fun to write.
I mean, I bet.
A torch song about bacteria, and it was inspired by two scientists. Mm. So cosmologist Brian Swim and my partner Paul, who's a biologist. And Brian, years ago, he challenged me as an artist to move us out of our anthropocentric stories, to write songs and stories about other than humans. So I found out that Amphioxus was this little fishy thing that invented the first spine, so I wrote a song about Amphioxus. And I found out that Temnospondyl, the ancestor of the modern-day frog, developed the first ear to hear the mating calls of the male. And so I write songs about that. So I was talking to Paul one day and saying, you know, I've just got this thing about bacteria. They're all washing their hands in antibacterial soap. And he told me that bacteria is the foundation of life. And I said, well, nobody's saying that. And I went on the internet, went on YouTube. Everything was all so about how bacteria is going to kill you. So I thought I really had to challenge that notion and write a song to celebrate our friendly bacteria, most of which we are. We have more bacteria cells in our bodies than human cells. It's like...
Yes, yes. Well, you know, your song and your comments are segueing into the next question that I have for you, because in your book, Becoming Intimate with the Earth, in a chapter called The Way of Community, you talk about the Earth community, and in particular, you quote David Abram, author of Becoming Animal, and his mention of totemism. Now, you live in British Columbia, where many Indigenous tribes across Canada and on up to Alaska carve totem poles as a physical expression of the concept of totemism. So please say more about totemism and how it can enhance our intimacy with the earth.
Yeah, so David Abram, he does something really interesting here, because he links Darwin's theory of evolution with the traditional spiritual beliefs of Indigenous people, that human beings are kin to other creatures and have various other animals as their direct ancestors. I found this really exciting, the idea that Indigenous people had already understood this connection thousands of years ago. Because when they say, all my relations, they're not talking about their aunts and uncles.
Right.
They're talking about the plants and the rocks and the salmon and the wind and the mountain. You know, they were more connected to the earth than modern-day Westerners because they understood that. So when they looked at their totem poles, they saw their ancestors, the wolf, the bear, whatever else. And, you know, we can actually do the same thing. When you see a bird in your garden, you can go, wow, an ancestor, the ones who first learned how to fly. You know, it's like it's possible for us to have that same sense of totemism. That's about all I have to say about that.
Well, no, that's absolutely right on. And, you know, in your you've written the book Becoming Intimate with the Earth, but you also do workshops on becoming intimate with the earth. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about those workshops. What happens in them and what's the focus?
Well, the workshops are experiential, outdoors, mm-hmm. as much as possible on the earth. Mm-hmm. We start by acknowledging how we are already intimate with the earth. With every breath you take, you are intimate with all the plants and phytoplankton and everything that's creating the oxygen, with the trees that are exhaling oxygen and us exhaling carbon dioxide. You're already intimate with the earth every time you take a bite of food, every drink of water. So we spend a lot of time just becoming aware of that, acknowledging that, with breathing consciously. And we move through the old stories of separation and disconnection from the earth, and we mostly spend the time breathing in the new stories of connection, collaboration, community. And a lot of times people come in the workshops and they're feeling pretty numb, and it's really exciting to see them denumb, if that's a word, and become more alive and connected to each other and to the earth. And it's a wonderful work that I love doing very much.
Yeah, and, you know, what I'm hearing you say is that it's not so much about we have to do something to become intimate with the earth, but to wake up to how a million things we do a day is already an expression or an act of intimacy with the earth.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so in your book and in your work, you talk about the universe story. You've mentioned it a couple of times on this show. And you refer to two of my favorite heroes, Teilhard de Chardin and Thomas Berry. Now, different people describe the universe story in their own unique way, and I'd like to hear your definition. Would you say in your own words what the universe story is and what these two men were about? Because I'm guessing you share my sense that we need their work now more than ever, and I'd like you to say why.
Oh, yes, we do. We do need their work right now, because Thomas Berry said many, many years ago that we're in between stories. And as I really believe, stories are what influence how we think about the world and how we act, that we're in a kind of a one foot in one story, in the old story, one foot in the new story. It's not an easy place to be. But the universe story, for me, it's a model of what is actually happening in our hearts and minds right now, because it's a big story that brings together an ancient mystical view of the Earth as a sentient self-organizing organism with the scientific view of the evolution, the origin, the birth, and evolution of the universe. And it's a story that encourages us to see the Earth as sacred, as having meaning, and therefore our lives have meaning. So when we see the Earth as sacred, we will not be able to blow the tops off mountains or use lakes as garbage dumps. You know, I learned the universe story from Brian Swim about 12 years ago and fell in love with it. And I was really fortunate to meet Thomas Berry in Berkeley to celebrate his 85th birthday quite a few years ago. And what's important for me is it gives a bigger picture for me of how I can live my life in a deep, meaningful way, and to move from isolation as a separate individual to understanding my interdependence with all of life. And so what I like about the story too, it's a story that helps us to maintain our zest for life, which is something that Teilhard de Chardin said. He said maintaining our zest for life was something like the critical spiritual practice of this time of transition, to maintain and increase our zest for life and to help others do the same. And so I want to live the universe story. I don't want to just have it as a nice story in my head. It's not going to do me any good. So that's why the practices that I do, that's not just a cool idea a cool story somebody said, but how it's part of my daily life. So if I'm drinking a glass of water, I can picture the journey of water. How did it come to me? You know, was it rain or snow coming off the mountain? And picture my watershed, the water running down the river and then coming up, and then the water as I drink it going over my lips, my mouth, my throat, going down into my body and waking up all the water in my body and feeling gratitude for that gift of water, because, and having a real love for all of it, because love is a practice. Love is a verb. It's yes. More than just a noun or just a feeling. One of the intimacy practices in my book that I talk about, it's one of my favorites, it's laughter. We are such a truly serious bunch of people that are doing this work. And I really, you know, I think it's the laughter is so important because, and I thought about this a while back, that Mother Nature made only a few laughing animals. There aren't that many that laugh. Boy, she sure could use a few laughs right now. And I find that laughter is one of the best ways to get out of your head and into your body. So yes. We do a lot of laughing in my... In fact, in my workshops at the bottom, I say, bring your sense of awe and your sense of humor.
Yes. Well, you know, in talking about story, you not only do the workshops on the book, but you do a new kind of workshop these days called Telling New Stories for Our Uncertain Times. What are these new stories and what happens in the workshop? I think you've pretty much told us what the new stories are, but what happens in the workshops?
Well, these workshops are brand new. I'm still planning on them, working on them. The first ones will be in May in Vancouver and Victoria. And the idea is to empower people to tell their own stories about the land, the waters, where they live. Because we really have been disempowered by the stories of the generals and the politicians and the oil conglomerates. And I think one of the most evolutionary acts we can do is take charge of telling our own stories. So what I will do with them is we will explore the elements of storytelling. So character, plot, and the whole thing. And then it's amazing. I did this once before in an hour, and I was amazed that it actually would work, but this we've got a whole day, so it should be even more, it go even deeper. So then they'll explore the essential elements of storytelling, and then they'll start oral storytelling, stories about the places they love. It could be a tree in their backyard. It could be a story about a bird at their feet or the mountain they see from their car window. And it could be truth, capital T, or myth, capital M, because they're all the same. So the idea is to increase the love for the place. Because when you love a place, you want to tell stories about it. And when you become so connected to that place, you want to protect it. And I think all change comes out of that deep love for the place.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, another question that just came to me as you were commenting a moment ago is this one. You and I are elders in this culture, and I'm wondering what that means to you. You share a great deal in your book about really meaningful experiences that you've had in your life. And clearly, those have molded you into the person you are today. So what does it mean to you to be an elder?
What does it mean to me to be an elder? Well, it means to be the best crone I can be. The crone being the wise old woman. It isn't just about passing on my wisdom, because that's part of it. But it's also the work of the crone. I talk about it in the book, how the crone is that energy that cuts the umbilical cord after the birth of a baby. So the crone is there to actually destroy one life because there was a relationship between the mother and the baby in the womb that has to stop so that there can be this relationship with the child outside the womb growing up. So the crone, it's a harsh word, but it's what it is. You destroy the old to allow the new to come forward. And so I have crone scissors. I use my crone scissors. And so sometimes I just know when it's time to say enough, whether I'm in a meeting or whether I'm involved in some kind of situation, I say enough. Stop. Use my crone scissors. Wake up, people. This is what we need to do. And I use them on myself, too. You know, I don't cut myself. I'm not into that. But the idea of knowing when something has served its usefulness and when it's time to allow and support something else that wants to be birthed. And that's how I mentor quite a few young people, by helping them to see their own beauty, their own talent, their own gift.
I need a gift for my twin sister.
And to help them to see how there's something else waiting for them, something that's calling to them and support them in that.
And sometimes we don't have a choice about those crone scissors. Sometimes life just cuts things off and says enough.
All right. That's true.
Yeah. So do you have any current or future projects that you'd like us to know about? And once again, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, in March, I'll be giving a workshop in Seattle. Thomas Berry's nephew, Peter Berry, teaches a course called Seed Bearers there. And they've been working with my book, and Peter invited me to come and do something with them. That's going to be on March 28th, so I'm really looking forward to that. And I'll be giving workshops in Vancouver and Victoria in May, and one on Bowen in April. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And people can get in touch with me through my website, www.paulinelabelle.com. And not to be confused with Patti LaBelle, because a lot of people call me Patti LaBelle. That's not it. It's Pauline, P-A-U-L-I-N-E, and LaBelle is spelled the masculine way, LEBEL.com. So, and there's several options if people want to order my books or CDs. There's options for how they can do that. So, so what a treat to get to talk with you.
Well, it's been delightful for me to talk with you, Pauline. I'm so glad you were available to come on the show today. And I'm such a huge fan of your work in the world and this passion that you bring for art and music and integrating it with the new story. So I thank you so much for being on the Lifeboat Hour with us. Thank you, listeners, for being with us tonight. We'll be back again with you next week.
Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows you really do. Everybody knows you've been faithful, give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. How it goes. Everybody knows. Now or never. Everybody knows it's me or you. Everybody knows that you live forever when you've done a little line or two. Everybody knows that dealing rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's going to be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. Everybody knows you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach at Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming apart. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows.
Metzger on the pedal steel,